A Pentecost Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on June 7, 1992. From the series, From Proclaimer to the One Proclaimed, entitled, The Wind Beneath Your Wings. The scripture readings are Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2, and chapter 2, verses 4 through 7, and Acts 2, verses 22 through 24 and 32 through 36, and John 14, verses 1 through 14. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 1, verse 2, Romans 8, verses 26 and 27, and John 14, verses 2 to 3 and 12. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
It is the day of Pentecost again, and can't you feel it? It is the day when we experience something beyond the ordinary, or experience something in the ordinary that is extraordinary. The day of Pentecost, according to Luke, who writes his gospel in the book of Acts, is that day in which those early followers of Jesus were overwhelmed with a sense of Jesus' presence, living presence with them. The spirit, the wind, the fire, all of the symbols that spoke of experience. I even went to the dictionary to look up the word experience. I hope there would be some neat Greek or Latin compound that could help me to illumine the word experience. Do you know what it means? Well, in our world, we are so conditioned by the scientific method, and we think of experience in terms of proof or demonstration. That's really what experience means. You tell me something and I deny it, and you say, look, I have experienced it. Well, put it in a test tube. Show me in a computer. You can't do it, can you? Experience. It's that which we know of a certainty, but which we know and are speechless to define further, to verify. Our world is so used to verification by the scientific method, which has been so successful. But in the church, we are always babbling about experience, which we are at a loss to verify in that manner. But we know, don't we? Surely we know. We are touched. We are moved. Something in our depths erupts. The face of a child, the embrace of one loved, a sunset, a flower, the experience of another, and grace, and love, all of that, the richness of human experience. And in that early circle on that day of Pentecost, they knew that God was present. They knew that Jesus was alive. That was their experience. That was the amazing thing. They had known Him. They had lived with Him. He was human. He was their brother, flesh of their flesh, bone of their bone. Jesus had been crucified. That they knew too. They could still visit the place outside Jerusalem where He had hung and suffered and cried in dereliction. But now they knew something. They knew the presence, the crucified One alive. And they began to speak about it. Peter began to preach about it, to clarify, to explain this this strange rumbling, this movement in their midst. And on Pentecost, the proclaimer became the one proclaimed. This Jesus, Peter said, you know Jesus, whom you crucified, God has raised up and made Lord Christ. That was a political statement. Caesar is not Lord, Jesus is Lord. This Jesus whom you crucified, Lord, anointed one. This one, our brother, who is here with us, has gone on before us. And so, Jesus, who had proclaimed the rule of God, the nearness of God, the inclusivity of the grace of God, this Jesus, who was crucified, giving the lie to his claims, was raised from the dead, God vindicating this servant, God underscoring the truth he spoke, God saying, that was the one, that is the way, that is the truth. They knew it. It wasn't over after all. Jesus was right. Jesus' way was God's way. The one who proclaimed and lived out the way of the kingdom, the nearness of God, the overwhelming, all-embracing, all-inclusive love of God, this one was right. The proclaimer became the proclaimed, this Jesus. God exalted. He became Lord and Christ, and the church was born in the worship of the exalted one who had been the crucified one, who was Jesus, flesh of our flesh and bone of our bone. That was what they proclaimed, because that was what they experienced on Pentecost. That experience was not in a vacuum. It was connected to the history of Israel and indeed to the history of the world, to the whole created order. What they experienced was the of God, the breath of God, the wind of God, the presence of God, a mighty, powerful wind that moved, a rustling, some kind of energizing, enlivening life. That's what they experienced. And that connected with their ancient story of how the whole of reality came into being. That connected with their understanding of creation. For in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, their ancient writer had penned. And the writer went on to say that over the waters, over the chaotic cosmic soup, the wind of God blew, the breath of God breathed, the Spirit of God brooded, and out of that chaos came the cosmos, the creation, the wonderful harmony of heaven and earth, and all of the natural order that we know. For Israel believed that the God that it worshipped was the God who had spoken and called all things into being, and who indeed took a handful of earth stuff and went breathing into it, enlivening, energizing, creating a living being in God's own image and likeness. The human person, all of Israel knew, was a reflection of the living God who had created all things and whose life, breath, wind, spirit was that which kept all things in being and in which all things cohere. And this one was the same God who breathed on Mary's womb in the fullness of time, so that there was formed this one Jesus. This Jesus was one who had come from God. God breathed, as all reality is God breathed. And this breath of God filling this one had fully followed God's way. And now this one who had been crucified was risen, exalted, as we saw last week, at God's right hand, cheering us on, someone to watch over you, to cheer you on, to pray for you. But now, more than that, someone here, here, in us, in our midst. That was Luke's way of telling it. John told it another way, you'll remember. John collapsed Easter and Ascension and Pentecost all into one day, because it was Easter Sunday evening when the risen one appeared in the midst of the disciples and said, "As the Father has sent me, so send I you. Receive the Spirit, the breath of God. As I have been in the world, so are you to be in the world." John admitted, and he wrote his gospel, he admitted we didn't know what was going on at the time. You can read it several times in the gospel. We didn't understand then, but later we knew. And so in the 14th chapter, we have this marvelous exposition of Jesus, which must have gone right over their heads. But he said, "Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's celestial mansion are rooms for all God's children, and I go before you. I'm on my way before you to prepare a place for you, that where I am, there you will be also. As I will be, you will be." And they said, "Oh, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way?" Jesus said, "I'm the way. I'm the truth. I'm the life." Now, this is John writing after Easter, right? That's why we're trying to recover that human way of Jesus, because Jesus said, "I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. This is the way. This is the way for full human existence. This is the way faithfully to follow God. I am the way. I am the truth, I am the life." No one comes to the intimacy of an Abba relationship with God except my way. And Philip said, "Oh, Jesus, that'd be so neat. Could you just show us the Father?" And Jesus said, "Oh, my goodness. I've been with you all this time, and you still don't know. Look at me. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. You can't find God behind the human mask. There is no spirit floating out somewhere in the ethereal blue that you can grasp after. Look at me." Incarnation means God in human flesh, God in human form. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And now, I'm going to leave you for a while. But don't worry, for I'll send another counselor, the Spirit of truth, the wind of truth, the breath of truth, who will be with you. And I won't leave you orphans. I won't leave you desolate. I will come to you. You see, on the one hand, I will send you the Spirit. On the other hand, I will come to you, one and the same. I will be with you, don't you see? My presence in my absence will be that spiritual reality that you can experience. Don't be afraid. I won't leave you desolate. I will come to you. Don't you see? Because I live, you too will live. And finally you're going to realize that I am in the Father. The Father is in me, and I am in you. Don't you see the connectedness, the intimate connection? Don't you see that all of reality, all of creation, and all of humankind is shot through with God? God is the wind beneath your wings. We are not some orphans on a spinning planet out of control. God is undergirding it all, overshadowing it all, embracing it all. Don't be afraid. Let not your hearts be troubled. I won't abandon you. I will come to you. I will be with you. I am in God, and God is in me, and I am in you. The very breath that you breathe is the wind of God. We are so much like goldfish in an aquarium full of water, saying, "Where's the water?" We are immersed in the reality that is God, and we breathe by God's breath. And with Philip so often would say, "Oh, if we could only find God," and Jesus would say, "Look into the eyes of your brother or your sister, for God has become flesh." God, out of the depths of eternity, has become incarnate in humanity, and in the community of God's people, there is the continuing encounter of the reality of God, who is the Spirit that makes us one, brothers and sisters, one of another. So you see, on Pentecost, we celebrate the vastness of the reality of God that permeates the total cosmic scheme of things. Don't you see what we have done in church? We have narrowed reality down to such a thin piece of the pie. We've made it all a matter of salvation, something that some divine intruder has come to do for us, to deal with our sin and guilt and leave, preparing us to leave as well for heaven. That is such a little piece. My sin and my guilt isn't that big a deal. God is the big deal. And to make the church all focused on this matter of salvation, sin and guilt, and legalism and morality is to miss the splendor of the divine display in the totality of reality. Pentecost is the time when we know that God is so much more, this God who is as intimate as our breath, who knows our name. Ah, yes, in Jesus, the very presence of God became concrete here. And it is still as concrete as your warm flesh and blood, your hug, your embrace, your love, your grace. God is the wind beneath our wings, and in this great wonderful, amazing thing that God is about. There is a grace. There is a positive pull. There is a push. There is a certainty that God's purpose and plan will be realized in the likes of us. For in the chapter I didn't read from Romans 8, we read that the Spirit groans within us as the whole creation groans in birth pangs until the revelation of the full redemption of the sons and daughters of God. For we have been predestined to be conformed to the image of Jesus. Jesus said, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. We have been destined to be conformed to Jesus. Meister Eckhart said, though we are all the sons and daughters of God, we simply haven't realized it yet. Oh, this morning, open the windows of your mind and your heart and feel the rush of a mighty rushing wind flowing through you. It is the very life of God that will undergird you and support you and keep you in all your ways and finally bring us all together home in the Father's house, where Jesus has gone to get things ready. Isn't that something? Julian of Norwich experienced God and said, all will be well. And all will be well. And all manner of things will be well. Thank God. The wind beneath your wings, who will bear you up and keep you in the palm of God's hand.